All right, let's get to the NXT. Now, you designed this thing. You guys worked it over. You've actually hired, you've obviously hired some extremely talented engineers to work with you. But I was watching the show. You had a lot of teething problems. I watched that landing where those gear folded, and I was sick. I was like, I can only imagine. What really impressed me was how little damage the airplane received and how you were able to keep it from, like, careening off into the woods type thing.
That was luck, you know. And backing up a little bit, you know, all the people on Team Nemesis, including all the engineers, the aero people, and, you know, everybody, Darren and Kevin and Steve and everybody that Steve, the whole pack of them, cast of thousands, as we call, are all volunteers, every one of them.
I wish I could volunteer on a team like that. That would be a lot of fun.
It's definitely fun. It has its moments.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a lot of long hours and hard work.
Yeah.
I did do some pit crewing once in the automotive world for a season, so I know a little bit about what it's like.
Yep.
Now, long road from first flights through crash to bringing her back.
Yep.
You had to have thought to yourself, this thing is just not fulfilling my dreams. How did you keep the faith? How did you keep pushing forward?
Well, you know, it's so funny because we ran the whole gambit of thoughts and emotions during all that time, you know, because the Formula One plane, we had zero problem ever. I mean, the most severe problem we had with that thing was on the very last flight at Mojave. I touched down, I had a flat tire. That was it. I mean, that was the problem.
Wow.
And then when we started to get close to flying this plane, the thoughts actually ran through my mind, you know, how much, you know, do we have left in the luck bank? You know, because, you know, when you have so many things potentially out there that can snarl a project, you know, you just go, well, we've had so much good fortune, so much good luck, and we have all these great people around us, you know, can this level of, you know, consistency and perfection continue? And the interesting thing about it was, you know, the Formula One had no systems, it had no hydraulics, it had one little bitty tiny 12-volt battery to run the radio. I mean, that was it. Those were the systems.
Wow.
You know, this plane has hydraulic system that has two, you know, 24-volt, 12-volt electrical systems. It's got flaps. It's got retractable gears. It's got, you know, alternators and, you know, solenoids. And, you know, then to add to that, when we race, we put anti-detonation injection into it. So, you know, we have a computer that controls, you know, how much detonation fluid we put in it to keep the engine from destructing and all that. So the level of complexity of the NXT went up by, I don't know, probably 100-fold.
Well, I'm sure there were so-called experts along the way that were telling you bit off more than you could chew.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Monday morning quarterbacks are always out there, and there were times that we were wondering, you know, did we indeed do that? And you know, but we just have great people around us. And after what I called the slide job at Reno in 2004, you know, we just had to regroup, and you know, we had some great people helping us, the hydraulics person and the gear design mechanism guy.
And
we went through everything, and it turned out that what we had was a hydraulic problem.
Right. It was pulling the gear door open.
Well, actually, that was the following year, but the uncommanded retract was caused by a, you know, we have hydraulic flaps and hydraulic gear.
Okay.
In our NXT, the kit since then have all been converted to hydraulic gear and electric flaps. So what happened on the gear uncommanded retraction was, typical landing would be flaps down, gear down, land. And put the flaps down first, get the plane slowed down, because it won't slow down.
Right.
And so then put gear down and land. this particular day at Reno, I put the flap gear down, and I added more flap. And it didn't even cross my mind that that was the first time we'd ever done that.
Right.
And so that flap actuation, because flaps move very fast, took a little teeny tiny bit of hydraulic pressure away from the landing gear system and kicked the gear out of over center. And poof, there we were.
Oh, so you don't actually have a hydraulic pump on board. You've got a storage tank that you charge up.
No, we have both. We have a pump and a
accumulator.
A tank.
But okay.
It's pressure, the pressure vessel that holds pressure in. At the time, we did not have that. We didn't have the
accumulator.
Accumulator, thank you.
Right.
So anyway.
So you didn't have that. You had only the pump and the systems.
That's right.
Oh, right. So you got very little pressure storage.
That's right. And you know the pump was on all the time. It would cycle and do all the things, but when that high speed flap movement just took a little tick of pressure away from the hydraulic the gear actuator and just pulled the gear just slightly out of overset.
Wow.
I still had the green light, I still had my my gear down lights and all that stuff, but on my last second of approach before I touched down.
So all it took was a little side load on the wheel to fold it.
Well, actually, it was just even the down load because I touched down, and as soon as you touch down in the NXT, you just raise the tail, and the landing is over with. I mean, it is done. It just goes where it's pointed. You know, you put it in crosswinds and all that stuff.
Okay.
So, anyway, so yeah, we had a lot of teething pains, and that led to in 2005, our inability to keep our gear doors closed, and we found that with an internet photo. We've been chasing it through vibration analysis, vibration transducers, and all that stuff all over the plane. We located the area, but we were looking for a real high-speed, high-frequency vibration of a gear door chattering, because it was a brand-new gear door, didn't fit like the original, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, we went on and wasn't until after the 2005 races that we saw that we weren't chasing a door vibrating. We were actually chasing the gear coming out.
Right, coming and then right, and then trying to flutter essentially.
Exactly. And at 375 miles an hour, the gear comes out. It gets your attention.
I imagine. I hope you gave that guy a T-shirt.
We did.
Very good.
We did. But anyway, so that cleared the way of all the bugaboos, and since then, starting in 2006.
Now I remember the comment. I guess it was after you fixed the gear door, mm-hmm. Or maybe it was the initial race. You finished third. And you said that we weren't really pushing the engine and it was a stock engine. And this thing is really going to go when we get the engine tweaked.
Right.
So that right away told you really had something.
We knew, right at the get-go, the first few laps that I took up there in 2004 even, we knew that we had something because, I qualified a little over 300 miles an hour just loping around, but I was so far back on the power that it wasn't even funny. I mean, I might have been running at 22 or 23 inches of manifold pressure. That was it, which is barely even cruise speed. In fact, not even cruise speed.
You must
so
have had
just learned to fly the plane on the course, so we knew we had something, we just didn't know what.
Well,
at that time, it was like, okay, we've got a beast here. What kind of beast is it?
Well, you must have had the proverbial eating grin on your face at the time.
We did. And, we really knew in 2006 that we had a horse. And those were my exact words, that we had a horse. In 2007, we went to Reno knowing that we were going to win. We just knew it because we knew how fast the plane was.
Right.
Little did we know that it was way faster than that over the years.
So. Yeah, I ended up watching the special on two different nights, but the other thing that amazed me was once you finally got your problems dialed in, that practically every race you ran, you set another speed record.
Yep, that's right. In 2009, we called it a record a day.
That's incredible. In fact, the vindication is they created a whole new class of racing around your airplane.
Yeah, that was. That was fun for the class to do that, and sport class, changed the rule to allow or open up a new division within the class called the super sport. And what they did was they defined the super sport category by putting, what we call it, engine altering substances in. Anti-detonation injection, nitrous oxide, you can run whatever fuels you want, whatever, almost anything you'd like to put in the engine.
Whatever you're brave enough to put into it.
Exactly, and they opened up the cubic inch rule to go to 1,000 cubic inches of super sport, and the sport category or sport class within the whole class still remains at 650 cubic inches as it began years ago.
All right, in closing, I just want to ask this final question. I noted that your competitors, your original competitors, John Parker, I think even Daryl Greenemeyer, they all ordered NXTs.
they all have them in their shop.
Was there a point when you hung up the phone and you said, yes, when you got the orders?
That was great. And Dave, I do want to say a couple of real quick things. I know you're running out of time, but I just want to thank, everybody at EAA for everything that they do to make aviation work. And I want to congratulate Rod Hightower on his new position and offer our support to whatever we can do to help. And Tom Pobrezny and Adam Smith have been great to us. And then lastly, I'd like to inform the members, Team Nemesis has already hit some of the press streets, but I'm breaking this at EAA right now for the first time. Team Nemesis will not be at Reno this year in 2010. We moved to Arizona primarily to take care of Patricia's mom, who has Alzheimer's. And that's a full-time job right now. We're just not going to be able to get away for the 10 days plus the months and months of preparation. Get the plane ready to go. So we're going to step aside this year and then get back at it at 2011. Our sponsors, Lycoming Thunderbolt, Redline Oil Aircraft, Bruce, JP Instruments, and Grove Aircraft, everybody's been awesome in supporting us with this. And this tough decision and tough deal for us to miss Reno and miss Oshkosh because of that reason is the reason I'm in Arizona right now.
Well, you got to do family first.
Yeah, well, we appreciate everybody's thoughts and prayers and supporting us. EA is awesome. I feel so bad that we're not there. I want to be there so bad.
Well, you can always listen on EAA radio.
I have been. That is the coolest thing. That's the coolest thing. I was listening this morning to Sean Tucker and Jeff Skiles.
Jeff Skiles, yeah. When the hosts announced that, after they went to break, I snuck in and I said, you should have said we'll be talking to Sean D. Tucker and Jeff Skiles, where Sean will be talking about aerobatics in the new Oracle Challenger, and Jeff will be talking about aerobatics in the Airbus.
perfect. So anyway. But thanks to EAA and thanks to all of our team members and sponsors of Nemesis and looking forward to seeing everybody out there in Oshkosh next year.
Well, you better, because I want to come shake your hand and get a picture by your airplane.
We'd be honored to do that, and thank you so much for taking your time, and appreciate it, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody, and thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. John Sharp.
My pleasure.
Our prayers, condolences, hang in there. You'll be back.
Okay.
Better than ever. All right, this is EAA Radio. You're listening to Digital Dave.